Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with candidates for Ketchikan City Council. With me in the studio are Spencer Strasberg and incumbents Julie Isom and Judy Zenge. This is a call-in show, so if you do have questions for the candidates, please call 225-9655. And we'll start out with introductory remarks from each of the candidates. And first up is Julie Isom.
Okay, I'm Julie Isom. I was elected last year to a seat that was vacant.
The person actually left the seat vacant, and I served the year out, and now I'm up for re-election again. I've lived in the area for almost 30 years, most of that time in Thorn Bay. The last 7 years, I've lived 7.5 years in Ketchikan. I served on the council in Thorn Bay, the city council, and I served 2 terms as mayor. I worked for Senator Stedman for 8 years, so I was very familiar with the process. However, being on the council for the city of Ketchikan was just a little bit different than being in Thorn Bay. It was probably 20 times the budget, and or maybe even more than that, and just a few different issues. So I'm happy to be running.
Thank you. And Judy Zenge.
Well, hello. I've been on the council for 3 years, and through that process, I've been fortunate to learn how city government runs. I think I'm a hard worker. There's still things that I'd like to see through, and I'll continue to work hard for you.
And Spencer Strasberg.
Spencer Strasberg. This is my second year running for city council. I ran last year unsuccessfully, but I learned a lot on the last campaign trail, and I hope to improve upon some of my thoughts and make the voter aware of my beliefs and put a candidate out there that has a little stronger background in business. I think that the current candidates have a strong political backgrounds, but I'd like to see someone in there with a stronger business background. So that's what I'm hoping to bring to the voter this time.
Okay, thank you. And if elected, what will be your top priorities? And this time we'll start with Judy.
Well, I think one of the things, of course, we're coming into budget, so we're going to have to take a really close look at that this year. I mean, with everything that's going on in the state, some of those things are going to hit closer to home. Also, you know, we're getting close to hopefully starting marijuana as a business here in town. And I want us to really keep a close eye on that and make sure that it doesn't affect the other viable businesses that are in town and have them all sort of complement each other. And there's a lot of things going on with Ports and Harbors. There's a meeting tomorrow night, so we'll be looking at that. So there'll be some focusing on that. And God knows there's enough things that come up.
And Spencer?
I want to focus probably primarily on 2 areas. One is looking for inefficiencies in our systems in the government and seeing where we could trim stuff. The state shortfalls are going to impact us. They're already impacting us, and they're going to impact us further. Oil doesn't seem to be going up in the foreseeable future, so we can expect that we're going to have to tighten our belt, and that's probably going to be one primary focus. The other one is to open up our tourism and figure out ways to sap more revenue out of tourism. That's our industry. That's our big main industry here now, and that is what I want to really focus on is generating more revenue, finding more ways of revenue. There's got to be ways that we can maximize tourism permits. You know, there's like 6 permit spots and 57 tour vendors or something. It's got to be ways we can hook those people up. We can make more out of that industry. I also think we need to relook at our current laws. You know, some of the outdated stuff that we have, the ways that we operate. We don't have lunch trucks. You know, I think that's something we need to start looking at. I think before there was a lot of concerns about lunch trucks coming in and being hard on the brick and mortar restaurants that we had. I think that that's the only way that we can start to compete and to get more dollars out of this stuff. We're not working in a positive fashion here. So we can't put more brick and mortar restaurants in here to serve these people. But as a guy who works downtown every day and orders lunch every day, the average wait for a hamburger is an hour to an hour and a half. We're not properly serving these people. And so a lot of people are going, hey, honey, I'll just go back and eat on the buffet, you know, and we're putting those dollars right back on the cruise ship. We need to work together. We need to better serve those people. Lunch trucks is probably going to be the answer to that. If we go back and look at some of those regulations and change some of those things, it's kind of like maybe some deregulation of the cab industry. We've had problems with getting a handicap cab service here. That's a huge issue, and that's also that concerns me that we have such a limited cab industry that we can't get someone to step up and raise the bar and get disabled cabs here. We have a place that's going to provide those cabs, and we still can't seem to get it done. We've been talking about this forever. So there needs to be deregulation in some of that stuff. We have Uber and we have other things that are coming. The city needs to protect theirself from those kinds of things. And there's ways, I have ways I think that I can affect a change in that kind of stuff. So those are the kind of things I want to look at, nurturing our industries here. Judy mentioned the marijuana industry. You know, that's one that's really volatile, and I'm real concerned with the direction that the city council members are going now. With the proposal of one retail store in city limits is absolutely the worst business decision I've ever heard of. Anybody with a business brain knows that that will crush that industry. So those are the kind of things that we need to have a business brain behind there, saying, how's this going to impact this? If I'm just saying, hey, I only want zero, hey, I only want one, you know, those are thoughts, but they're not really, there's nothing behind them to say, how is this going to affect the grow places, the level of service that the people who are going to have this industry and use this industry are going to get, you know. And so very important decisions, and I think we need to have someone in there with a business mind making some of those choices or help guiding the other members through that decision-making process.
And Julie Isom.
Well, I'm not running on any particular platform, but there are a few issues I'd like to see. I'd like to follow through with. Being on the council just a year, I dabbled in a little bit of many, many issues. So, and a couple of the issues were mentioned by the other two candidates here. One of them is the handicapped cab. I would really like to see a handicapped accessible cab in Ketchikan, and plan to follow through with that and be on any committee that's necessary for that. The other one is the marijuana issue, and we did not pass that. We passed it for first reading, and Thursday I plan on proposing an amendment to that to allow for two, not just one marijuana retail shop. So at Thursday's meeting, that will be the second reading, and we'll see how that goes. The budget is another huge one, and specifically in the budget, I would like to keep a better eye on overtime, the city's overtime. And I got a good look at it this last year, and I'm trying to get a grasp on reasons why we need the overtime, which there are some good reasons, and then there's really good reasons to keep a close eye on it and make sure it's not getting out of control.
Okay, thank you. And marijuana has been brought up a couple times, so I'm going to jump to that question. It does seem to be a topic that's coming up again and again as the community kind of figures out where it wants to go with this new industry. And now the council is going to be voting on the measure to limit the number of retail pot stores in Ketchikan to one or two, perhaps, on Thursday. And so I was hoping you could expand on this. Why should there be a limit, and why should there be that number that you've chosen? And this time we will start with Spencer.
You know, I know this is out of order, but I'd almost rather one of the other council members go and explain that very question to me, because that's the question I have. Why would we limit it at all? We didn't limit jewelry stores, and we have an over limit of bars, and we have a lot of other things, but I'm wondering why we would limit that industry. That's a good question.
So if you, Spencer, were on the council, what would your choice be?
My recommendation in this situation, there are very few locations that are even viable within city limits. We know that. There's like thin little slivers and pieces, and people have to get very crafty at figuring out how to put some anywhere. My thoughts on that would be to let the industry figure that out. We're going to know how many are going to, you know, if let's say four open up and there's not enough business, but only for two will close. The industry will figure that out. For us to meddle in that and change the ripple of time and say, we're going to make this happen this way, we affected a difference in that. And I'm not 100% sure what that difference is. I know by limiting them, it causes problems with the people who are growing it. So if there's only one person to sell that to, or there's only two shops and it gets limited, there's no one for those people who are setting up the grow places to go to. Eventually, those would all kind of, no pun intended, weed themselves out. There would be less growers. There'd be less of these. The industry will figure that out on its own. You know, we have a small population here. A lot of people, what they think is going to happen, they're looking at places like Colorado and Washington, and the population is completely different than what it is here. We have a very small population, and it's probably going to be a real feast and famine business for whoever gets involved. They may have a large tourist population, which I'm the one person in town who has a billboard with a pipe on the front. And to tell you, the amount of people that are coming into my store looking for something is actually a pretty small part of my business. I opened a coffee stand and I make cinnamon rolls now. I'm not making tons of money on this industry because that isn't really built yet. We have traditionally a lot older folks on there. And so it'll be up to them to find out whether there's enough business to substantiate it. But for us to just say, I only feel like we should have this many, you know, it makes it very exclusive, and we've screwed up with that, with the cab companies making them exclusive, and we're figuring that out now. That exclusivity comes, there's a price for that for the people who use that service and stuff. There's no one there to raise the bar. There's no one to say, I'm going to provide a better service here, and then the other ones rise up to that bar. There's a very select few that can play a game and have a monopoly, and that's what's wrong with this town. That's why we're not growing at a fast rate like that. Things are too exclusive. We have too few of people serving food, too few of people touring people around, too few of people. We can maximize those opportunities, and we should be doing that for that opportunity. The voter said we want to have this. We should be doing whatever as council members to further that agenda along. And any other political motivations should be put aside in order to take care of what the voter voted for. That's what I believe.
And Julie Isom.
I don't believe that any industry should have a monopoly, and so I really think we need two for the competition factor. I would probably not vote for more than two because we've also got a borough who can make up their minds. We're the city council, and the Gateway Borough Assembly can decide if they want more within the borough. I wouldn't want that to be the face of Ketchikan. I would like it available, and I'd like to see it available for medicinal use, which is why I voted for it in the first place. I wouldn't want to get that reputation that go to Ketchikan, it's everywhere. It's on every corner. It's, you know, not regulated. And just the short answer, I just really don't want that being the face of Ketchikan. And I don't think it's going to make us millions. I really don't think that's going to be the answer to our revenue problem.
and Judy Zenge.
Well, I think that's the whole thing. We don't know what it looks like. I felt that we should only have two downtown because I don't know how this is going to affect the rest of our businesses. And this is a new industry, and do we want to sacrifice everything that we've built so hard and taken so much time to, you know, regulate and fill our streets with pot businesses? I mean, there are people that have come to me and said, well, what about survival of the fittest? And I get that. But I just think that we can do this. We can start with two, see how it works, see what we have to regulate, see what we don't, and maybe have a sunset clause on it. But I think that it's important that we take our time with this. And running it up the flagpole with one on every, you know, every thousand feet or whatever, I just don't think that that is a smart way to do things. I think that two in the downtown area is fine.
Spencer has a point to make.
If I can just follow up real quick, I don't want to take too much time on this. There's other important issues as well. If the borough decided that they only wanted to have two, I believe that the two that would be in the city would qualify for the borough, so we would still only have two. That's my concern with that math and that thought of saying, oh, well, let those guys do what they want. If they say we only want one, and yours qualifies as that one, you now have only one. Or if you have two, you only have two. You know, that's a pretty select. I don't know how we get down to saying, hey, it's you two. You know, you two are the ones we favor.
Right. No,
you know,
reason.
That's the good old boy club kind of stuff. You know, and that's the stuff we need to stay away from. You know, I hope that if I do get to this seat that. That maybe I bring back kind of a Librandism or something, you know. I need a blue-collar guy in there that's going to call it like he sees it, you know. And honestly, these are limiting factors that limit that interest. So maybe with two, it won't be very attractive for a testing facility to come here. So then we won't have any industry at all, you know. There has to be working pieces of this thing, and if you limit those pieces down, you've effectively employed a political move to stifle this industry, you know, and we probably shouldn't do that if we don't know what it looks like. You know, making rules to make rules until we know what problems we might have seems also foolish. We have to be decisive on this. To go from one to two to back to meeting, you know, let's be decisive as we make these decisions. Wishy-washy, it already takes two readings and a vote to make something happen. If we start doing things wishy-washy, we see nothing happen for now 2 years. We're the slowest moving state on this forefront. Oregon, Washington, Colorado, their legislators figured out how to move a little quicker than we do.
Okay, and sorry, Julie has a point to make.
just a brief one as far as being wishy-washy. The council, each council person knows there's two readings on this issue. So whether it's wishy-washy or us going away, realizing, you know, did we really mean to do that and coming back, we all knew there was a second reading on it. So like I said, we'll see what happens Thursday, and I just don't believe it's wishy-washiness.
Okay, and we are going to move on, but first I'm going to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so if you have questions for the candidates, please call 225-9655. And so if you're elected or re-elected, one of the first issues that you're going to face is the city and KPU budget review process. And those budgets are expected to, again, be extremely tight. So I was hoping to hear some of your budget priorities going into that issue. And this time we will start with Julie.
Okay, well, like I said, the overtime. That's going to be an issue. And I'm really hoping to be on the community grants committee again, which that's in my opinion, it is our quality of life in Ketchikan. It's all the nonprofits. It's the things that we put money toward that I guess you could say bring us joy. You know, we've each got a passion. I believe we each need some sort of service in the community where you're not getting paid. You need to volunteer somewhere in your community. And normally it's with one of those places that come to either us or borough assembly asking for money. So I know there's not going to be a whole lot of money left for that, but I'm hoping to be on that committee again, like I said, and make sure that we're vetting those projects properly, that the application process describes exactly what we're getting for our money, lets us know where they're spending it, and that those programs continue. And then, like I said, the overtime and just keeping an eye on the biggest expenses, which is personnel. We all probably know that, but trying to pay attention to see what's needed and what's not needed.
Okay, and Spencer?
Again, I'll be a rookie at that, but I think it's budget work like any other. I think that it's a much larger scale, and I'm really excited about kind of cracking into the books and seeing where I can find inefficiencies. I think that's probably a big area. We're gonna have to know where to trim some stuff, you know, like we have budget shortfalls and we're not going to be getting state money. And I too worked for a nonprofit for, you know, 5 years, and it was some of the most rewarding work that I've ever done. And also I feel that the nonprofits, you know, just because it says nonprofit, you got to have ways of creating revenue and standing on your own sometimes in times of short money, you know, and that's going to be really important for these agencies around here also to be figuring out how they're going to carry their personnel and all that stuff. And I don't think the city's going to have a lot of extra money for new stuff. I realize there's some important services that we do need to keep up, but we'll have to be looking at those and finding out which ones are really important. And if there's things to be trimmed, it's possible that those areas are the areas that will get trimmed. We just lost CRIF, you know. That's a pretty vital piece of our infrastructure here. And it doesn't mean that nonprofits are going to be, like, not touched over there, especially during this time, because they're nonprofit. It means those places need to create revenue, and they need to figure out how to be efficient and pull their own weight as well in times of downturn, and that's what we're in. I also want to maximize revenue. I think that's really the answer. It isn't, you know, we can't sit here and cut everybody's job out and say, well, we can fix the city budget if we get rid of these KPU people and stuff. You know, that's not a good way to go about that. And I think the best thing, I've always had an approach where I keep my foot on the gas. We need to figure out how to make more revenue from the 950,000 people that are coming here in the summer. You know, we can figure out how to manage our shortfalls with that revenue. We're supposed to be talking about getting the bigger ships and stuff now. I'm pretty excited about hearing that, and I want to go to tomorrow night's meeting and hear about those port changes and what we can do to accommodate those bigger ships carrying 3,500 people instead of 2,000. You know, those are exciting possibilities. Those are the things we need to mine up here, you know. Going after taxpayers for a tobacco tax, you know, that's a really unappealing way to try to make up shortfalls in nonprofit organizations or whatever. I'm not going to be supportive of that tobacco tax in any way, shape, or form. We went this round last time around, and it's even more distasteful this time around because I'm beginning to consider it bullying. There's a few people who keep bringing this issue up and passing it on now to the voter and hoping maybe they can get something shoved through that way. It was very distasteful last time, and it's not any more appealing to see if you can't get some voters to beat up on a small population of people. I'm not interested in mining money from our local population, and certainly not a small disadvantaged population of people because they have a habit. I'm looking to turn money out of tourists who save their money and come here to spend it with us. You know, we're the folks who keep the lights on all winter and keep the heat going so they got somewhere to come back and vacation, and they save their money to come here and spend it. We just need to figure out more polite ways of taking their money out of their pocket and giving them a good experience that they can go home and smile about.
Thank you. And just for clarification, I did a story about it. This is why I know. The port expansion or reconfiguration meeting is on Wednesday, not tomorrow.
Oh, so, sorry.
Tomorrow we have the school forums.
Oh, right.
Yes.
There's something every week.
Clarification, I guess. I thought it was Tuesday today.
That happens to me a lot. And sorry, Judy?
Yes?
Do you need me to ask the question again? Budget priorities.
Well, so when I first went to the council, one of the things I looked at was the overtime. And, you know, they do a pretty good job with the budgets. Yes, there's still areas that we can look at, but I think we need to be careful with that. Personally, I don't want to see us raise any more rates. We are going to be looking at water and how that affects the canneries. Because our utilities should be able to pay for themselves, but we have to be able to come up with a way that can happen without hurting our families, because that is one of the things people have called me when we raised wastewater, for example. You know, some people had to give up certain things in order to be able to pay that. And I think that we need to be a little more aware of how that affects the individual people, but also, at the end of the day, our responsibility is to make sure that these things pay for themselves. And so we really have to dig in there and take a look at, you know, how we're affecting people's lives. When you talk about jobs, nobody wants to cut jobs. Those are funds that stay in our community. So there has to be another way, some other way that we can go through the budget and make those cuts. So maybe we look at a different way of handling projects. Maybe we look at travel. Maybe we look at training. I mean, nowadays there's so much training that can happen online. Do we need to go to conferences all the time? I mean, those are things that cost a lot of money. And I think that those are the areas that we look at first, instead of right away I hear people, well, you just cut all those jobs and... Well, we can do that, but that's taking money out of our community, and that's not the way to do it either.
Okay, and you mentioned wastewater rates, and one of my questions is actually about water rates that have increased on a regular basis over the past few years. But then there's also been a study that shows residential users through their rates are heavily subsidizing some of the commercial users who use a lot of water, such as the fish processors. And is that something that the city council is going to be able to look at and make adjustments to? And is that something you would support? And this time we're going to start with Spencer.
I probably would support looking at the canneries and the bigger businesses with higher consumption use. You know, if we looked at the local population, that's going to be, like Judy said, you know, that's kind of taking it out of our local people's pocket who are already stretched pretty thin. I think, you know, we pay a heck of a price at the grocery store and the gas station and everywhere else, you know, and it takes a lot of donations to our schools and stuff like that for school travel. I mean, we're stretched pretty thin. The only places that we can affect those changes will be in our commerce area and our bigger businesses and they do have high usage. And I know personally from work that I've done in some of the canneries through my fence business, I've done some work inside of them, and I see wasteful water practices because we don't have some kind of a sense of accountability. It would be kind of like if I didn't tell my kids they had to worry about turning the lights off. They won't turn them off. You know, every light in the house will be on all the time. So if there's not an accountability, I think we can only expect that we'll use more and more water, and we'll have all of these infrastructure costs like this chlorination facility and all the other things that we've built, and we're going to have to keep building those. Of course, we have to find some way for people to be accountable for the use. You know, and that's the first area that we start. I'm not saying that we don't put meters on houses. You know, just about every community and across the globe anymore has a meter on their house. You know, it's kind of strange that I don't have one. I still try to be conservative with water because any hot water I use goes through an electric heater. You know, and so, you know, I think all of us as people, I mean, I think about that all the time. You know, if I run my garden hose and I'm washing my car, I just don't think about it much. You know, we could all be held a little more accountable, and I think we'd just shut them off and we wouldn't put as much demand on our infrastructure.
And Judy?
You're going to have to go. I just completely went blank here.
This is about the water rates and the fish processors and their use subsidized by residential rates.
Well, it's true. They are, right? I mean, and I think that even the council recognizes that. And I think we're working towards making it a fairer system. I mean, even government, ports and harbors, we use a lot of water, and they're looking at ways to take care of that. So, yeah, certainly I would support that.
And Julie?
Well, we're definitely not paying for what we use. This is one area where I'm, you know, I'm paying the same in my single-person household as somebody who has six or seven people in their household, and It doesn't seem fair. It seems more fair if we had some way, like Spencer was saying, some way to look at how much we're using. And I know, just like what you said, Spencer, if I was paying for what I used, I would be turning it off. I probably wouldn't let the water run while I'm brushing my teeth, which I do. And, you know, people in California think about this because, you know, they probably do pay for what they use. But we just don't even think about it here because we all pay the same price. I think something needs to be done. Meters are expensive. However, it would be an accounting nightmare if they went to each home and said, how many people do you have? Well, we're going to charge per person. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. And that's my answer.
Okay. And then again, another budget question, considering the tough budget year expected and potentially no end in sight to continued tough budget years. Would you consider a proposal to raise taxes, sales, or property to maintain the current level of city services? And this time we'll start with Judy.
No. I wouldn't consider a sales tax right now. I think that right now, especially in our community, people are suffering enough. And we're just going to have to do our job, and we're going to have to look at ways to raise revenue and to make some cuts. I mean, there's a lot of families here that are suffering enough because of, you know, what's happened with the state. I mean, we all say, oh, well, the PFD is free money, and, you know, we shouldn't worry about it. But there's a lot of families here that depend on that money. And now they're, you know, that's going to be cut basically in half. So we need to be really careful when we think about raising taxes. And I wouldn't support that this year.
And you mentioned sales tax. Would you also not support property tax?
No, I wouldn't support property tax increase.
And Julie?
I am the same. I wouldn't support a tax right now. When you said maintaining the same level of services we have right now, that's a real difficult thing, too. I just think we need to look elsewhere. I would not support a tax right now.
Okay. And Spencer?
I wouldn't say I wouldn't support a tax. I'd probably support some kind of a sales tax if it was across the board, not selectively just at like the smoking population, you know, or a toilet paper tax or something that was across the board so that it was fair. You know, I understand it, you know, and honestly, we're in tough times. You know, that's what this is about, and that's about making tough decisions. Sometimes, you know, in your home or whatever, you have to make decisions that are difficult. You know, maybe you don't get to go on vacation, or, you know, maybe you got to pay some bills instead of, you know, having some fun money or something, you know. Those are the difficult decisions, and sometimes you do have to raise some taxes, but you have to do it in a fair and an appropriate way across the board in some way that it brings in enough revenue to make a difference. But generally, no, I think we can get more revenue. Revenue is the answer, not more. You know, we increase revenue opportunities through tourism and jobs. If we create more jobs, we're going to have more people paying into taxes by sheer volume of buying things. We need to create more jobs here. That's what we need, not more taxes.
Thank you. And I was not going to ask about this, but a caller did, and the caller is curious about consolidation. Is it possible? And this time we will start with Julie. Consolidating the borough and city governments.
Oh, yes. I knew what you were talking about. You know, and this same issue came up last year, and I'd like to remind everyone what the outcome was. Across the board, that room that we sat in when we had our radio thing last year, all eight of us or nine of us, however many were there, we all said, yes, I'm all for that. We should do it. Cut down on government. Cut down on municipal costs. And then the same for the assembly. All of those candidates across the board said, no, it's a horrible thing to do. And you can imagine why. They're in the borough. I'm going to say yes. I'd like to see it done. I just don't know exactly how that would look, how it would happen. But I would be for it. Yes, consolidation for sure.
Thank you. And Judy?
I think consolidation is a good... I'm sorry. Please. I think consolidation is a good idea, but I don't think now's the time. I think that, you know, we need to work together, certainly, and I think we can find some common ground, maybe work towards that. But if somebody was to say, hey, Zingy, you're on a committee to consolidate tomorrow, I'd be like, yeah, sorry. I just don't think now's the time to do that.
Ann Spencer.
Oh, I think consolidation would probably be a good thing. Kind of like Julie, I'm not sure how that would happen. If I got a week or two to think about it, you know, I could really, really rack my brain and maybe come up with something that might work. But that's a difficult nut to crack. But I think that's an efficiency thing. If we were able to pull that off, look at what we could save. You know, if we did that and it was a working model when we got done and we weren't unhappy with it, much like we probably are unhappy with the model we have now, but if we were happy with it and it worked, and I think it would save a tremendous amount. You know, that again, we're gonna have to figure out how to be efficient.
And for the record, the community has attempted to consolidate multiple times over the years, and each time, like you said, it's a tough nut to crack, and we haven't cracked it yet. So maybe someday in the future. And so the speaking of the city and borough governments, they have continued to spar over various issues, and so is that just the way it is, or is there a solution? And if there's a solution, what is it? Judy.
To get them to stop sparring? You know, I don't know. I mean, I've watched, I respect every person in the borough assembly. Some of them I know personally. I'm able to sit and have a cup of coffee, and then I watch them sometimes at these, what do they call it, the cooperative relations committee, and I think there's nothing cooperative about that. I really don't know what the answer is. I think we need to just take a step back and start thinking about why we're all elected in the first place, and work for our constituents and work together.
Spencer?
I can only assume that there's some people are motivated by different things. You know, I don't really know how to answer that question other than to assure the voter that I have zero political motivations. I'm just an independent Alaskan businessman who wants to make good decisions for my community. I'm not interested in doing anything shady or making any deals, or I just want to make good decisions for our community. And I think it starts with that. I think when I see the politics involved, that's what irks me, and that's what makes me want to throw my hat in this ring and go in here and say, hey, I just want to be one of those guys that was kind of like Librand and just said it like it was. You know, we don't have anybody like that right now. We have a lot of people that are connected politically and move in directions kind of together. And so it's tough to get things done when you have groups of people working against each other.
And Julie?
I'm kind of at a loss here. I don't see the sparring. There are going to be different personalities in any group, on any board, on any assembly, on any council. I believe that we have a great council right now, and we all get along really good. And I can't even, I mean, I know what you're talking about because I've heard, like, rumor of the sparring. I haven't personally seen it myself. And like Judy, I get along with all of them. I've sat and had a cup of coffee with a couple of them. And I know they deal with much different issues, and maybe that's where it's at. Maybe those issues are the kind that drum up the sparring. I really don't even know, but I don't see it. So I guess I'm blind to the sparring. I just don't think it exists between the bodies anyway.
Okay, thanks. And we did have another caller with a question. And this person was asking about the issue of public inebriation. Is there a solution to deal with that? And this time we will start with Spencer.
Well, I suppose we could get rid of it if we outlawed alcohol. You know, that might be the only solution. I don't see that happening, though. And so I think that one thing that people have to remember is that we're a city like any other. You know, we are a city. We're a city in the middle of what was claimed to be nowhere. And we still have all the same kinds of ills that a city would have. You know, there's not a city across America that doesn't have some population like this. We can look at those models, but we're not a genie here. We can't wave a wand and just fix our problem. And I think there's been a lot of people that are equally as smart as us, and I think we're probably just as smart as any of them. And we've looked at this problem, and it's difficult to come up with that. You're going to have a certain population. They're there by circumstances, and somehow we need to figure out how to serve those people and take care of them, you know, to the best we can. Some of them don't want any of our assistance. And in that situation, we kind of got to let them leave them alone. You know, taking the benches away, that's a dumb idea, you know. That's all I can say about that. You know, I mean, then they'll lay on the sidewalk, and then I guess we rip the sidewalk up too. You know, I mean, there's we can provide more services, I guess, the best that we can, and we can take care of those people. But I don't think we're going to ultimately get rid of that. I don't know if it's really saying the homeless are all inebriated is kind of stereotypical. There might be some homeless people out there that don't drink alcohol, but choose to end up being homeless. The fact is, we have people who are homeless there. They're sleeping on our streets and stuff. We have a small population of them here because we're a small island. We need to figure out how to kind of take care of those folks. I guess we're going to have them, you know, and I guess just figuring out how we take care of them, best serve them, is probably all we're going to be able to do. We have streetlights, we have roads, we have all the stuff that they have in a city, you know, and all of us that live within that city. And Julie, they have marijuana shops in all the cities, and they are on more corners than one or two. But that's what they have in the city. And there's borough, and there's even further than borough, there's like Myers Chuck, you know, where there's nothing. And there's choices to live in areas, whether you want to live on Prince of Wales and Thorn Bay or something, and there's nothing there. people can get away, but in the city, right here in this little city, this is where we chose that we want to have those kinds of things. And so we should be behind that whole thing, I guess, as we're going to have some problems with the city, and we're going to have some amenities that we get with the city. We got restaurants, and we got stuff, you know, they're limited, but there are restaurants, and they're pretty darn good. So we live in the city here, and we're going to have some of that, and we just best deal with it. Maybe help out with the homeless shelter over there is doing a really good job. You know, they're doing the best they can. And the Salvation Army and the soup kitchens, those are the things we need to expand on, those kind of things. And, you know, see what we can do. Because some of those people, they don't want to move into a house somewhere. And if they did, they might not stay there very long. And then we'd, you know, continually be doing, kind of chasing the subject. But anyway, that's kind of all I have on the homeless thing. Other than I think it's good that we have a board that's working on how to handle that now. I find it interesting that we don't have any, like, stoners, like, sleeping on the streets. You know, I did want to mention that it's been more than a year and a half since legalization. We didn't put any regulations in place for these folks. And now we're really limiting the population who's demonstrated that they've been very responsible from the very beginning. And the one population who's not so responsible out there, we just don't really do anything with that population.
And Julie.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the original question, the inebriates and being publicly inebriated, which, I mean, being inebriated in public, right? I'm probably saying that wrong. I want to agree with Spencer on one part of this issue. We are talking about two different sectors of the population. I mean, they might be combined, but we're talking about people who are drunk in public, and we're not talking about those are necessarily the homeless, which people who are drunk in public, it could be you, it could be me, it could be going out with your friends on the weekend and bar hopping, it could be anyone. And those people just need a little guidance to get home. I really like what CHAR does around the New Year. Is it New Year's that they offer free cab rides? Well, that's one way. You know, another way is to have more presence of the police out and just making sure people are getting home safely. And if they are the homeless, then, you know, making sure they're getting to a safe spot. I also agree getting rid of the benches is not the right thing to do, even if we have to go squirt them down with a heavy douse of water. You know, whatever it takes, I don't think we should be taking the benches away. But as far as public people being drunk in public, it's going to happen. And we have alcohol in this town, and it's going to happen. And people just need a little guidance to get home safely.
And Judy,
about the inebriates in town, we do have more than we had last year, and I think everybody's noticed that. The city is putting together, along with some of the nonprofits, I think the day shelter is going to be involved, PATH, many of the people who deal with the inebriates on a daily basis will be involved, the police department, and they're going to be looking at, you know, what can we do? What kind of services can we offer these people to help them out? I mean, it is a problem. It's a problem if you have a business. It's a problem if you have apartment buildings. I mean, there's, you know, I know of folks trying to make it home, and there's people sleeping in the stairwells, and that's a problem. We're going to always have some of that, I think, but, you know, we got to worry about their safety as well as the safety of the rest of the folks in the community. And, you know, I think the city's doing a pretty good job of working on it.
Okay, and we did have another caller call in with a question. What about public restrooms? Do we need more? And this time we will start with Julie.
Well, along the same lines as the previous question, I think if we had more, we would have more problems. I don't know if we need more. Maybe downtown we do. I'm not usually downtown in the mass mobs of the tourism. Is that what they're talking about mostly?
I'm going to say probably, because that seems to be a chronic issue with people from the tour of cruise ships in search desperately of a restroom.
Okay, and having said that, though, I have heard of problems that the museum has because they're one of the few public restroom areas.
And that's a big part of the renovation. That's
right, exactly. The restrooms in the museum, and this, other than that, this is really outside of my knowledge base. I don't know.
Okay, and Spencer.
I have a little bit of temperature on what's going on down there. I got quite a few of those people coming in urgently, going, "Hey, where's the bathroom?" And I noticed that they tend to come from like the more downtown. I'm right at the tunnel right there, and fortunately, right across right across at Berth 3 right there, there's a new bathroom facility. It has a giant sign, and I find that to be the handiest thing because I can go right over there. Generally, we don't have an open bathroom for people. There are plenty of times that I say, "Come on back here, ma'am. We'll let you use the bathroom here," because they are in need, and I think that it's in, like, a location. I think that the library is going to be pretty good on that back stretch over there to have some kind. But again, we should probably be putting up some signage that lets people know that's where the bathroom is and gives other businesses right around that area somewhere to say, "Hey, right over there." And it's a big enough signage that they can see it. I can tell that makes a big difference down on this end of the dock. My concerns with, because budgets are tight and we're not just going to be able to pull money up. Maybe there's out of the head tax thing, we could find some money out of that a lot easier than anywhere else. And since this is a bathroom for tourists, that would seem to make very good sense. But I would think somewhere down near, I guess Salmon Landing probably has something in there, but somewhere on that kind of an end of town, you have a triangle kind of thing happen. As long as you have multiple facilities for them to get to. There is a need for us to keep improving those services, but we have to do it with the money we can find, wherever that comes from. But I would say yes, there is a need. It's a pretty strong. We need all kinds of infrastructure downtown. We need to build a bustling little money making machine that just kind of pulls those people off the ship, frisk them down, and sends them back with a smile.
Frisk them down.
It's a crude plan, but we can work on it.
I'm getting a great visual right.
And Judy? No, I agree, but I wonder, listening to Spencer, if maybe part of the problem is signage. Maybe if, we had better signage to where those bathrooms are. I mean, I know that the Performing Arts Center, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that there was bathrooms put in there and they were to be for public use. I don't know that 100%. But if there was signage where those public bathrooms were, it might be a little bit easier on folks.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely they're needed. I do get calls about that. So it would be nice to figure out some plan. I can tell them to come to the mall, but they usually don't want to do that.
We get some who make it all the way up here.
Really?
Yes. And we do have about 7 minutes left, so if you have a burning question for our candidates, now's the time to call. It's 225-9655. And what in your opinion, makes you a good candidate for Ketchikan City Council? And this time we'll start with Spencer.
I'm sure you're not rotating around because this is like the third one I got in a row.
No, the last time.
I'm really, keeping maybe close I'm just, track.
Yeah. I'm just feeling like I've got the one. I think I make good business decisions. I think I make tough business decisions. I'm willing to get up and kick my own butt in the morning, and I think that's what's going to give me an advantage. I work harder and I work longer than most anybody I know. I only sleep an average of about 5 hours a night. I have a 1 hour nap in the middle of every day, and that carries me through so that I stay up long, tireless nights. Anyone can see my growth. I I welcome people to look at what I've created. You know, that's kind of how this whole thing. That's all I can really say. I'm not going to sit up here and say a bunch of stuff and say, hey, voters out there, believe me, you know. You can see what I'm building. You can see what I'm creating. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Judy's Mall, you know. And
you say that, you know, like it's a bad thing.
Well, it was one of my best decisions to move out of there, though. So, honestly, that was a tough decision. That was a tough decision for us, you know. With all due respect, you know, you have a mall that you run your way in, but we decided to move on because we had to. That business wouldn't have survived. That business started with a $2,000 budget. The Foxhole started with $2,000. That included the paint on the wall in that mall. Ultimately, in an economy where Dick Koo said 3 meetings ago that across the board all sales were down 10%. I've doubled my sales this year. So that's the kind of guy I want to put out there for the voter to have an opportunity at. So.
Thank you. And Judy?
Well, I think that, you know, the last 3 years I work really hard. I make sure that I answer all my phone calls. I'm not afraid to ask the tough questions. When I have concerns in the packet, I go down, I take a look at it. I also, not only do I run the mall, but I've owned a company for, well, under different names, but for 20 years, a transcription, court reporting, and processing service business. It's very successful also. And I just think if the voters out there think I've done a good job for them, then I would ask you to vote for me again. And that's all I got to say.
And Julie?
For me, I would say the biggest reason is because I will listen, and I'm willing to listen to both sides. I just want to tell one little story about what's happened to me this last year. The first time I voted the way that a group of people thought I shouldn't have voted, I got a few private Facebook messages from them, and one of them was pretty bold, called me a few names, and then said, "You just squashed your political career." And I just had to laugh because I'm not in it for a political career. I never got into it thinking that I'm making a political career out of it. I just want to listen to both sides and make the best decision from that.
Thank you. And we do have one last minute caller on the line, and it is Kevin. Kevin, are you there? Great. Go ahead with your question, Kevin.
Well, I'd like to find out what all the candidates feel about term limits and if they could explain their answers in detail, and I'll take my response off air.
Thank you. All right. Term limits for Ketchikan City Council. The borough has them, but the city council so far does not. And this time we will start with Judy.
I suppose it would depend what those term limits look like. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing, but I do wonder, for example, having the background. So it would depend how that would work. I would be in favor of term limits if they were staggered for different candidates. That might not be a bad thing. I could see myself voting for that. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
And Julie?
I have the same opinion. I am not dead set for term limits, but I would definitely consider voting for it. I like the idea of not making a political career out of any position, like I said. And so I would probably vote for it, depending on what it looked like in the end. I mean, working for Senator Stedman for 8 years, I know when a bill goes through the process, it can look like something totally different when you're voting on it. So, yeah, but short answer, yes.
And Spencer.
Gosh, I'm kind of undecided. I'm mulling it over in my head here, and I'm thinking pros and cons. Well, what's going on? You know, never really considered it. I, You know, a big part of me immediately said, you know, if the voters voting for you, I guess that's, you know, probably a really good thing, you know. And if we wanted to keep the candidates that the voters really like, that would be a good thing. And I hate to term limit out someone who the voter really is impressed with and reelecting here, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, nah, he's done, you know, we got rid of a good one. So I'm kind of afraid of that, but I also understand, you know, it's term limits. So give me some time to get back on that one, but you certainly gave me something to think about.
All right. Thank you very much. And we are officially out of time. That's it for KRBD's City Council Candidate Forum. So thanks to the candidates, Spencer Strasberg, Julie Isom, and Judy Zenge, and of course to those who called in with the questions. Our next candidate forum is September 21st and will feature school board candidates. We'll have assembly candidates on September 27th. And please remember to vote on October 4th.